right, welcome back. 1 o'clock hour. Connor Happer Show here on 1620 The Zone. I appreciate if this is an opportunity for people to send in their, like, things that they've done on the field or on the court at sporting events.
But not like I was a quarterback in high
school. No, not that.
I don't want that.
I don't know. This is a bad start for Sipple because there's no way he's ever done anything like that. But Sipple joins us now. Hey, Sip.
Hey, how are you?
Sipple, have you ever done like a on-field promotion at a sporting event?
What do you mean an on-field promotion?
Like, you know, you go on the field and you, you know, shoot a three-pointer or a half-court shot, something like that, and you get a prize?
That. No way.
Couldn't even get you. No, you did. You ended up throwing out the first pitch at the Salt Dogs game, right?
Oh, yeah, I did do that. Yeah, twice, actually. Yeah, I did do that half.
Okay.
I did do that.
That's good. Yeah, I guess it counts.
Yeah, I was really nervous, too. I wasn't in my comfort zone at all.
No, but if I remember correctly, it didn't go horribly.
No, I can throw a baseball.
You didn't go to the mound, though.
No, I was not going to the mound because I was just worried about my balance.
You didn't have your cleats on?
Right. I didn't want to do that. I didn't think it was necessary.
I mean, every time I went up there, I'm digging in, man.
Well, you're a former pitcher, Hap.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to get up. Like, if it was me, I went up.
College pitcher.
I didn't go up to the mound, though. I mean, I would have never heard the end of that.
No, because you were a college pitcher.
Barely.
Well, I'll barely count.
I guess. Sipple, the coaching staff is done. It's all wrapped up at this point. How do you feel about the way things kind of turned out?
Well, here's what I'd say about it. You know, November 8th, everything felt really rocky, right? November 8th, when Frost made the move, he made the moves on Lubick and Verduzco and Austin and whom I'm held. You just didn't know at that point, right? I mean, I think if you just, you know, fast forward 2 months, a little over 2 months, you'd say it went really well. I don't want to overdo it on the conversation because they haven't coached one game and, you know, I've never seen Brian Applewhite coach a running back. I don't know what that looks like, but Scott went out and got veteran guys, you know, except for Donovan Raiola. And I think he got, like Trev Albert told us this week, told the Journal Star anyway, that Frost got all the guys targeted. There was nothing that would qualify as a freak show during this, you know, like where a guy took the job and then left immediately for something else. There's nothing that was, you would judge as being rocky. You know, he got accomplished guys. A couple guys where you really raised your eyebrows, right? Probably Mickey Joseph and Mark Whipple, where you're like, wow, he got those guys? So I'd say, yeah, I mean, you know, it's once again, you don't want to overdo it, but yeah, I think it went really well for him.
Well, and then you're also getting, just on a broader scale, guys who have some familiarity with the program, like Mickey does, in the landscape of things, and Bill Bush as well. Like my thought on that is, I think you're going into, and you talk about the landscape of the sport, you know, rosters are going to be constantly flipping over and changing. I think there's going to be a premium on having kind of a vision, understanding what you're doing. It's just kind of a matter of, can Nebraska accomplish that in a short span of time?
You got it. That's it. And that's what, you know, if you talk to Frost right now, he'd say exactly that. Now we got to get to work. It's got to happen quick. I mean, the things that we're saying happen, they're saying the same things. I mean, so that's, you know. Now, the one thing I'd say about it that maybe, you know, you could say some criticism is when Frost brought this staff, there were some pretty smart guys in the coaching world that were telling me he needs older guys.
Yeah.
You know, he's going into a league where there's a lot of that veteran coaches, and he's going in with a pretty young staff. and not you know, not a bunch of guys who are accomplished at the Power Five level. And there were guys that threw up warning flags. So there's a, so what I'm saying is this is, did Frost kind of discover it too late, you know? But this is the sort of staff that he probably needed at the start, to be honest. Now, that's hindsight, and that's unfair, frankly, because he was coming off of a magical run. He was coming off a magical run. And it wasn't like I was saying out of the gate, I think you needed to make some hires of older guys that maybe have been in the Big Ten or been in the Power Five at least. So, it's unfair for me to go that direction too far, but this is probably what it should have looked like. Yeah, Bush is a great hire. Think about it. I mean, a guy like Bush has coached a Thorpe Award winner. Mickey's coached a Biletnikoff winner. Whipple's coached a Biletnikoff winner. A guy that just was in New York, a quarterback that was just in New York as a Heisman finalist. So, yeah, I mean, it's real. I mean, the discussion is very real.
Well, the thing that we liked about it at the time was the continuity of those guys. And I mean, maybe that was overshot a little bit because of and we didn't see the lack of experience, especially at this level and that factor. However, there have been some guys on that staff who have grown to, you know, really do a good job at this level.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Happer, here's the thing. We're all swept up. I mean,
sure.
The one thing, when Scott was hired, we were just all swept up in that success at UCF. So I don't know. There's things that you got to try to learn from all this. And, you know, one thing is not to get swept up too much if we're ever in this position again, or if you're talking about other programs, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I've said it to you before, but one thing I really took out of all this is not to, you know, when a guy comes in, say, okay, you got a long runway, mister. I mean, you got 7 years to get this thing rolling if you want it, if you need it.
Yep.
No, that's not reality. It's not. If you struggle, you're not. That goes away really quickly. Don't deem a guy the savior. Don't talk about him like that. Don't say, this is the only guy that can get it done and we got it. Those conversations, you'll hear them at other places. And for us, we've been through it, and it's a cautionary tale. And I think you got to learn from that stuff.
Well, there was a lot of this looks good on paper, and what you kind of miss out. And I think the conversation goes this way for both football and basketball, right? We can do this in the scheme. We'll translate and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing that it's lacked is context, right? What is it going against? You know, and how does it look when you are playing people who, you know, can defend it and know exactly what they're doing, right? I mean, that's what it's felt like a little bit to me.
Good point. It's a really good point. It's really that sort of context is really important in this league. I mean, this, think about just Big Ten basketball and what Fred's up against. And yeah, you don't consider that so much when you get hired. You're just thinking, you can get kind of myopic and just think about, yeah, Fred's in Lincoln. Fred has the Hendricks.
Right.
You know, look what Fred's recruiting. You don't think about Wisconsin's been to the NCAA tournament 22 of 23 years. They're never bad. You don't think Michigan State, well, you know, they have a Hall of Fame coach. They're never bad. Never. They never go through really bad years. You don't think about, my God, you don't think about Rutgers getting, now look at Rutgers, they're pretty good. You don't think about Penn State, you know, you turn on Penn State, you know, we think, Penn State's not very good at basketball. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, turn it on and look at them. They recruit big-time athletes at Penn State to play basketball. Not a great basketball program, but I guarantee you they're going to recruit big-time athletes that are tough, rugged players, and it's going to be a bitch to beat them. The Big Ten adds some really, really poignant context.
Hey, Simple, let's move over to basketball for a second. If you know, what happens if Trey McGowan's comes back and you know, things start to seem a little bit better, or they kind of figure this out in a little bit in the back half. Not that, you know, there might not be changes on the horizon, but like what happens down the stretch here for Nebraska basketball? We've talked a lot about what happens if it doesn't go the right way. What happens if they kind of figure things out here a little bit?
Yeah, they could. I mean, I think what they have to do is weather this. I mean, the Big Ten schedule's tough throughout, but their February looks a lot different than what it's looked like to this point, what's going to look like for the next few games. Yeah, can they weather this? I mean, sometimes you worry about a team can only weather so many 30-point beatings. You know, they got beat by 30-plus at Rutgers. Now, if they get beat by 30-plus tonight,
yeah,
add on the 30-plus loss to Michigan, the 30-plus point loss to Auburn, how many of those can they take? So that you got to watch. I think you got to watch that. It would be really helpful if they could get, like, Indiana at home, you know, get a shot of confidence on Monday. I'm not going to talk about Purdue like that because it just seems like a far-flung notion.
Tough, yeah.
McGowan's coming back could help. The schedule easing up a little bit could help. Now, what are we talking about, though? I mean, are we talking about celebrating a 5-15 finish?
Right.
I mean, I don't know. It feels like a little bit like that when it comes to Nebraska basketball. You know, like the bar has been set so low that if they can get to 5-15, it feels like, okay, maybe they got something going here. I don't know. If you want a program like that, that's what it kind of feels like right now, and I don't think that's the best thing.
I don't, but you're in a tough spot, right? I mean, it's a $18.5 million buyout at the end of the year, and that has to be a part of the thinking. I know it is a part of the thinking.
Absolutely.
So the here and now is you want to see if it can work. And maybe this is the, like, do you think it's that serious? There's the kind of, it's the test ground for that over the last, what, I think 14 games left now?
Well, sure. I mean, Trev Alberts has to watch it. I mean, there was probably only 7,000 people in the arena the other night.
Yep.
I mean, he's got to watch that sort of thing. Of course he's got to watch it. I mean, I just don't think he can sign off on, okay, no matter what happens, we're bringing him back. I mean, that's dangerous. But I'll tell you what. I mean, just so I'm clear, I don't think that – I'm not in that mode right now. I'm still – I want to see what it looks like. And I believe they'll win some games. But I want to see it. I don't want to go too far into that, down that road. I do think Trey McGowan's coming back could help. I mean, obviously, we always talk about how well he plays defense on the perimeter, on the ball, et cetera. That might allow, you know, if he can play point guard and make good decisions with the basketball, then maybe Alonzo Bird's role could change and put him more, you know, put him back into a two guard where he fits really well. So, yeah, what's all that look like? I don't know. But the $8.5 million discussion is that buyout number is obtuse, and it definitely affects the conversation.
For sure. I mean, even if it, you know, even if it goes well and whatever the bar for well is over the last 14 games, you can make up for yourself. But even if they show some sort of life over the last 14 games, are we headed down a similar road that Scott Frost was, that just he just experienced a month ago with the restructured contract and changes on his staff? And could it look like that for basketball?
Well, I mean, that, yeah, it could. I think for sure. And there's different, you know, there's ways around the buyout. I mean, and, you know, I don't want to get into that, but, you know, people might wonder why, hey, what's the big deal? You know, why? Well, $18.5 million is about as large a buyout as you'll see anywhere for a men's basketball coach.
Right. And it was certainly the reason why, or one of a significant reason why Frost wasn't let go this year. His buyout was $20 million.
Right. And why is it, I mean, people wonder, well, why is it difficult? Well, think about it. Think about if you're a wealthy booster, wealthy donor, and they're still raising money. You know, the athletic department at Nebraska still has to raise money for the Go Big project. You know, you're always in fundraising mode. And now if you go it happen, if I go to you as an athletic director, Nebraska athletic director, and you're a well-to-do booster, and I ask you for a few million, what are you saying? Are you saying, well, now wait a second. What are you asking me for here?
Right.
Are you asking me for money for this Go Big project, or is this, you have that $18.5 million buyout. What are you doing about that? And can you pay that? And why are you asking me for money if you can pay that? You know, I mean, it complicates that conversation too, is what I'm trying to get at. So, Trev Albert is in a tough spot here. So, but Fred can help him by, what if Fred can get to 6 or 7?
Yeah.
You know, that helps. Now, I don't know. I wouldn't rule that out right now, but I'm not going to predict. I set the ceiling at 7 at one point in recent weeks, and man, I got people just tore into me. Like, what are you watching? You're crazy.
Yeah, it seems quite far away. Yeah,
7 ceiling though. What I want to emphasize is it's ceiling. That's the ceiling, and I've lowered it. That was before the Rutgers game. It went back down to 5.
Yeah, in your conversation with Trev, you know, what, a couple days ago now?
Tuesday.
And we've gotten at least a little bit more familiar, and he's got familiar with the situation that he's in over the last 6 months since he's been here. What, I think I asked it pretty plainly to somebody else earlier this week, but the differences between, in especially in management styles, but also otherwise, between Bill Moos and Trev Alberts. Yeah.
It's too early for me to say that for sure. Now, Trev, the one thing that's very striking about Trev, well, okay, there's one difference I can say right now for sure. Well, it's very, I'll just say as plainly as I can. There's no way Trev's given he's not extending Fred Hoiberg's contract after a 7-25 season.
Right.
Like Bill did after the 2020 season, and you know, after in June of 2020, Bill Moos extended Fred's contract after a 7-25 season, 2-18 in the Big Ten. Trev's not cut out that way. He's not. He's going to be probably a lot more demanding. And he's going now. And what the other thing that's very striking about Trev is he's going to watch the bottom line. Probably he's going to be more fiscally conservative, I would say. And Bill was known as a money spender. He was known as that throughout much of his career. He was that way at Washington State. Now Trev's going to be the best way to put it. Trev's going to be more conservative that way. Trev is watching things like if a football coach comes off the road, and wants to stay in Omaha because he's got to be in Omaha the next night. Trev is going to be more apt to tell that coach, no, come back to Lincoln and just drive back. I mean, he's going to be,
yeah,
he's going to be more fiscally conservative is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Parker told me the story on whatever day, I think it was Wednesday, we had him on, and he brought up a situation kind of like that where he just asked the question, right? It was on the travel sheet. Is like, what, why are we visiting a guy who's already signed, you know? And
right.
Like, that's just a question that's going to get asked now, it feels like, at least from that perspective.
Yeah, and schools and ADs are different that way. It can get pretty wild for people that aren't familiar with it. I mean, I remember back when Frank was the coach. I shouldn't have probably said who the coach was, but they sent a private plane to Louisiana to see a prospect, and the prospect never materialized for the meeting. So they sent a private plane to Louisiana and flew it back, and they didn't even see the project. Now that's the kind of thing that can get an assistant or a head coach in some trouble, some hot water with an AD. Like, wait a second, you never even saw him. So yeah, you gotta, and that sort of thing is easily, you know, it never sees the light of day, right? Nobody ever finds out about it, but that stuff can happen. And an AD, some ADs will watch that more closely than others.
Yeah. All right, Sipple. Good stuff. We'll let you go. Appreciate the chat, man. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Glad to do it, Happer. Take care.
That's Steve Sipple from the Lincoln Journal Star. as always, good stuff from him and good insight. Yeah, if you missed the chat there that Parker and Sipple had, there's a few stories out that they have about it now, and I assume there's a little column coming from Sipple over the weekend. Check that out, HuskerExtra.com. We'll take a break. We will get you set for the weekend. We'll talk some NFL games. As I have one or two against the grain picks for this weekend.
All right.
You could get super wild on Super Wild Card Weekend.
I see what you did there. I like it.
We'll have that coming up and more next on the Connor Happer Show, 1620 The Zone.